this article is about the dwindling population of Christians in Iraq. A population that has gone from nearly a million down to perhaps as few as 100,000. This has occurred not just with the onslaught of the Islamic State, but it began with the onslaught of American troops into Iraq. When America invaded Iraq, there were about a million Christians. They were the third largest religious minority behind Shiite Muslims, Sunni Muslims, and then Christians. But the American invasion of Iraq turned out to be deadly for Iraqi Christians. They were protected by Saddam Hussein, who would not allow Islamic fundamentalism. He ran a secular government. But the moment that America invaded Iraq, Iraq was deposed of its secular government, and a religious government was imposed on Iraqis, one sponsored by the mullahs in Tehran. And as a result, they began, as a religious government, to systematically hunt down, annihilate, rob, rape Christians. And over the 10 years of the Iraqi invasion by American troops, the Christian population was decimated. So when the Islamic State came in and became ever more belligerent, and mind you, during this whole time before the Islamic State was created, virtually every Christian church in Iraq was burned. Christians' homes were burned. The Christian population was decimated. And yet, we're now led to believe that all of that is really immaterial. It's just what's happened with the Islamic State that is bad. That's not true. The catalyst for all of this was the American invasion of Iraq. Well, today, Christianity there is dealing with this concept that a central tenet of Christianity is forgiveness. And I want to tell you, that is just so ridiculous that a person would forgive someone who wishes to harm their children. Someone who will deliberately has and continues to kidnap their daughters so that they can systematically rape them. And that you want to tell me that it's moral for a religion to say, oh, yeah, we forgive them. That their homes are burnt many times with them in them, and we should forgive them. That they're decapitated, and we should forgive them. I mean, you don't forgive that kind of evil. You know, if somebody insults you and they say something that is harsh, you want to forgive them, that's fine. Don't care. You know, if somebody steals your place in line and you want to forgive them, that's fine. But if someone is systematically seeking to and is engaged in the kidnap and forced prostitution of your daughters and mass annihilation of your people, forgiveness is stupid. It's immoral. It's irrational. But nonetheless, it is a central tenet of Christianity. They say in this article, it's a hard sell for children who find themselves homeless after their families fled the Islamic State militants who ordered them to convert or be killed. Oh, yeah, this very religion that the politicians think that they're so enlightened and tolerating and accepting through multiculturalism and diversity and tolerance in Germany. Fundamentalist adherence to that religion went to the remaining Christian population who hadn't been yet decimated in Iraq and said, you either convert to Islam, you surrender to Allah, who was modeled after Satan, or we're going to kill you. And yet the politicians in Germany thought that would be a fine, fine thing to endorse. Let's have more of that in Germany. With Iraq's Christian population dwindling, yeah, it's down below 10% of the original number. The daunting task of helping kids cling to their faith of their parents falls to church elders. And why would that even be appropriate? Who cares? Who have taken hundreds of families now living in the sprawling complex of tents because they're homeless. Their homes have been confiscated by the Muslims. It's hard to explain what's happening here. No, it's not. It's very easy to explain what's happening here. The world has tolerated Islam, and Islam is not tolerant of anything that's good. Not even tolerant of other things that are bad. Father Daniel Akhori told FoxNews.com in the predominantly Christian district of Ankawa, inside the Kurdish capital of Idlib. It's kind of interesting that the Kurds have a capital. Kurds don't even have a country. How could they have a capital? Quote, I was teaching them the parable of Ishmael and Lazarus, talking to them about heaven and hell, so I used to bring up ISIS and asked them where ISIS will go, and they said directly to hell. That's one of the problems of Christianity. It's heaven or hell. You know, you agree with them and you go to heaven. If you oppose them, you go to hell. And they are the determining factors, not God. And the fact is, there's not a single Christian in heaven. Not one. Never will be. And a religious proponent, a religious devotee, doesn't go directly to hell. In fact, no one actually goes directly to hell. You're tried first. And it's only those who have actively engaged misleading others, promoting that which is deadly and destructive, like the politicians are now doing in Germany, that end up in hell. And it's actually Sheol. Al-Khoury tells a story of a Christian in Mosul who had been living next to a Muslim man for more than 20 years. That would be under Saddam Hussein. When the Muslim man one day suddenly threatened him, ordering him to leave Mosul within 24 hours because he was a Christian. That's what happened after we deposed Saddam Hussein. So the Christian man started to pack his things, but before leaving he said he won't leave without saying goodbye to the neighbor, Al-Khoury recounted. His neighbor opened the door and was really angry and shouted at him, why are you here? I told you to leave Mosul. The Christian man said he wouldn't leave without first saying goodbye. His Muslim neighbor started to cry and promised to protect him. what a story. There you go. So rather than inform us about why Islam demands that you convert or die, why tell us why the Muslim ordered the Christian to leave Mosul so they could confiscate their home, their property, their possessions? Why, rather than explain the cause and effect operating here, he tells them a story about a person that said, I just wanted to say goodbye. Oh, good grief. The story continues. In the enormous swath of Syrian and Iraqi land now controlled by the Islamic State, the homes and churches of Christians have been looted and burned to the ground. Now, why not explain why that has occurred? Why not explain who Muhammad was, what he said, what he did? Why not explain Muhammad's criminal past? Why not explain how the Quran endorses looting? Stealing is lawful and good, according to the Quran. Why not explain why Muhammad said that burning people's homes was an excellent behavior? Why he ordered the first Muslims to go burn people's homes, often with the residents burned alive inside of them? Why not explain why Muhammad said convert or die? Why not? Why not tell people the truth? Why not inform them so they understand what is happening? Christians in Iraq once numbered around 1.5 million, or 5% of the population. That's a large number, 1.5 million. 5% of the population. Current estimates hover around 200,000. Now, whether the actual number was a million or so before we invaded Iraq, and now it's about 100,000, or whether the original number before we invaded, the United States invaded Iraq, was 1.5 million, and it's now about 200,000, we're still at the same approximate ratio, which is to be decimated. The annihilation of a population. And so here in the Christian cathedral in Germany is accepting and endorsing a religion that has annihilated the Christian population in Iraq. And don't make, you know, be really clear about this. It's not the Islamic State that did this. Yes, the United States, you know, Islamic State participated, but the overwhelming preponderance of Christians who were decimated in Iraq were decimated long before the Islamic State was ever conceived. They were decimated actually by the Shiite government that America empowered in Iraq. And their homes were burned, their possessions looted, their churches destroyed, confiscated, long before the Islamic State came into existence. So why is it that once a secular government in Iraq was deposed, that the Shiites decimated the Christians, and then the Sunnis continued what they started? If Islam is not the root cause of the death and destruction of all who will not surrender to it, how do you deal with the loss of 1.3 million Christians in Iraq? And at the same time, endorse the religion of Islam in Germany. How do you say that bringing more Muslims into Germany is a good thing when both sides of Islam, Sunni and Shia alike, saw to it to eradicate 1.3 million Christians over the past decade in Iraq? Imagine that. You've got politicians and newspapers and churches, church leaders, and Germany telling those who are intolerant of the most deadly, the most dishonest, the most despicable institution ever created by man, Islam, that these politicians, the church leaders, and celebrities are all endorsing, accepting of the religion, of the doctrine that eradicated 1.3 million Christians in Iraq over the course of 10 years. Truly amazing. I mean, to have these stories both appear in the same day, 1.3 million Christians eliminated from Iraq over the past 10 years by both fundamentalist Shia and Sunni Muslims, by politicized Shia Muslims, and by religiously motivated Sunni Muslims, both doing exactly the same thing. Burning their churches, burning their homes, stealing their property, and decimating them in Iraq, right under our nose, over the past decade, while Muslims are being supportive and endorsed in Germany. Now, this says that the current estimates hover around 200,000. Their numbers depleted by murder, forced conversions, and flight, mostly at the hands of Islamic State radicals. That's not true. And it's amazing that writers for periodicals can be this poorly informed, this dishonest in the reporting. We've been covering the story of the decimation of Christians in Iraq on this program now for 4 years, and the program that preceded it, for 4 years. I've been talking about it on Blog Talk Radio now for, well, all 10 years. It began immediately after the American invasion. There was story after story of Christian churches being burned and of Christians being murdered and terrorized by Muslims after the American invasion. And the fact is that the preponderance of those Christians, some 1 million of them, were eradicated prior to there ever being an Islamic State. Somewhere around 200,000, maybe 300,000, have been eliminated by the Islamic State. That's a third of the, or quarter of the total, not the majority. And if you're going to report news, get your facts right. Getting your facts right is really important here, because there's this notion that this radical extremist expression of Islam in the Islamic State is somehow the cause of this terrible tragedy, when the actual cause of this terrible tragedy is the United States invading Iraq, deposing a secular government, replacing it with a Shiite government out of Tehran, and the aftermath of the civil war which spilled throughout Iraq and Syria that resulted between Sunni and Shia Islam, with the Christians caught in the crossfire. That's what occurred. And you abrogate responsibility of the United States and of Shia and Sunni Islam in the annihilation of the Christians when you pin it on the Islamic State and then present them as being radicals. The fact of the matter is there's no such thing as radical Islam. There isn't a radical Quran. There's not a radical Hadith. There's not an extremist Quran. There's not an extremist Hadith. There's only one Quran. There's only one Hadith. There aren't two variations of Muhammad. There's not two ways to interpret Islam. Muhammad was a criminal. He was a mass murderer. He was a rapist. He was a pedophile. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was a thief. He was a ruthless terrorist. And Islam is based entirely on his words and deeds. There is only one Islam, one Quran, one Muhammad, one Hadith, and all of them present Islam as a criminal enterprise, wholly destructive, wholly dishonest, holy and completely deadly, even demonic. That is the only informed and rational conclusion that can be drawn from the evidence. And when we misrepresent history by inferring that the Islamic State is somehow radical and that they're responsible for this, as opposed to Islam and fundamentalist Islam and the Islam of the Quran, the Islam of Muhammad, the Islam of the Hadith, we are grossly misrepresenting the facts, and therefore honest conclusions cannot be drawn. So the remaining Christians in Iraq have started to pack up their things, and those that are able to leave are leaving. Others are murdered. Those who remain and refuse to renounce their beliefs, even under the threat of death, are subsequently killed. One Christian living at Mar Elia brandished a large tattoo of Jesus' mother Mary on his arm. Now, you know, when the Torah says, don't get a tattoo, the Torah says, I don't want you cutting or painting your skin. Don't want you to have tattoos. Now, if you have a tattoo, you know, it's not going to keep you out of heaven if you embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant. It's just one of the instructions that Yahweh provides. He says, I don't want you to have tattoos. And the one thing that he absolutely wouldn't want is a religious tattoo, because he's wholly opposed to religion. So, you know, you're going to have to be grateful that there's no bodies in heaven, because the religious tattoo by itself would exclude you. Unless you renounce it and recognize that it was a mistake. But beyond that, there is no Jesus, of course, and this affair with Mary as if she's relevant. I mean, Jesus, even if you knew his real name, he's not relevant. And his mother is absolutely not relevant. I mean, this idea of Mary and the Madonna is purely pagan. It goes right back to Babylon. And it was conceived to control women. It's a way of giving women a deity, an object of worship, of someone to emulate. It's a control mechanism for women. It was born and bred in Babylon. Astarte was the name of the Queen of Heaven and the Mother of God in the Babylonian religion. And Yahweh, the precursor to Mary, just assails her, criticizes her, condemns her. So I want to tell you, this moron that tattooed a picture of Mary, and by the way, we have got no clue as to what she looked like. None, and it doesn't make her, she's not even relevant to anything. I mean, not even remotely relevant to anything that's meaningful to God. How would you know what she looked like? Unless you're going to present her a little halo, a little sun god halo over her head. Unless you're going to present her as a prayerful-looking religious garb. Unless you're going to present her with a little baby in her arms so that she's the mother of God and the queen of heaven. Unless you're going to put a little crown on her head. Put a little sacred heart that's on her chest. If you're going to make her look real religious, and then look, you've got a religious icon. You're in direct violation of Yahweh's second instruction that he etched in stone. Like many others, his face was discovered by the militants, and he and his family were forced to flee to safety of the Kurdish region. And the Kurds, of course, are Muslims. The only reason the Kurds tolerate the Christians is because by tolerating the Christians, the Kurds get more weapons from America. That's it. No other reason. More than 100,000 Christians have fled the clutches of the terrorist organization. And we just call it what it is, the Islamic organization, since its advance across the Nineveh Plains in Iraq, home to some of the world's most ancient Christian communities. The Kurdish region has taken in more than 1.5 million displaced people, including some Christians, but also other ethnic and religious minorities since June. Now, it's not 1.5 million Zoroastrians and Christians, not even remotely close to that. Maybe 100,000 Christians and Zoroastrians. The rest they've taken in are Muslims. This is a direct indication of what Islam does. All you have to do is look at Iraq while it was controlled by a secular dictator, and Iraq under the Shiite regime that America empowered, and Iraq under the Islamic State, to see the difference between a secular government and an Islamic government. And what happens? Dateline here is Moscow. Western nations should stop threatening Russia with sanctions and instead offer to ease off of existing restrictions in exchange for progress in the Ukraine, President Francois Hollande of France said in an interview on Monday. Now, Francois Mitterrand is making a statement because Europe's economy is tanking. And they're tanking in large part because they're principal trade partner was Russia. And the United States, having imposed sanctions against Russia and forcing Europeans to follow America's misguided calculations, is bringing economic ruin on nations that are already in turmoil. And when France elected a communist leader in Francois Hollande, and they imposed really draconian tax confiscation laws. In addition to continuing to offer all manner of incentives not to work, French economy began a death spiral. And then the French were manufacturing products, including some warships, for the Russians, found themselves in the teeth of these sanctions, losing business with one of their largest trading partners. Now, the other thing that Francois Holliday recognizes is that the peace process in Ukraine is wholly sponsored by Russia. The war policy in Ukraine is wholly sponsored by the United States. The United States sees it as in its interest to create a war, a civil war in the Ukraine for the express purpose of taking Ukraine into NATO and forcing Russians to put Russian troops on its border to defend itself against NATO in the Ukraine. It's part of the Cold War strategy of the Obaminator, making the world a vastly more dangerous place. But the peace process has been wholly sponsored by and negotiated by the Russians. They are the only advocate for peace in Ukraine, not the Kiev regime, certainly not the United States, and most certainly not NATO. Now, backing President Vladimir Putin into a corner, he said, will not work, giving the high-level voice to what is seen as mounting sanctions fatigue. The sanction fatigue among European politicians as the Ukraine crisis lurches into its second year. Yeah, the European leaders don't want sanctions on Russia because it's crippling their own economy. It's shooting themselves in the foot. And their principal supplier of energy is Russia. It's their principal trading partner. It is counterproductive to do so. And you back somebody into a corner, particularly when you're the belligerent, bad things happen. You know, Russia's is not a country to be trifled with. They have a long history of being backed into a corner by belligerence and devouring those who attack them. Look what happened when a vastly more powerful Nazi Germany decided to attack Russia, backed them into a corner. And ultimately, it was Russia that brought Germany down. This says, I'm not for the policy of attaining goals by making things worse, Mr. Holliday said in an interview on France Inter Radio. I think that the sanctions must stop now. Now, it's really uncomfortable for me to agree with Francois Holliday. But he's right. And I, by the way, I have no love for Russia. I think Russia's most recent vote in the Security Council to destroy Israel on behalf of the mythical people known as the Palestinians, the Islamic terrorists there, was so reprehensible that I have absolutely no affinity of any kind for Russia. And I've been there many times. But the government, when it did that, lost any zeal I might have had to say, you know, the world's ganging up against them unfairly. Don't care. But I have to agree with Holliday here. The sanctions on Russia, all they're doing is making the world less prosperous, less secure, and putting it at far greater risk. Russia's position is misunderstood, he said. Putin does not want to annex eastern Ukraine. I'm sure of that. He told me so, Holliday said. What he wants is to remain influential. What Mr. Putin wants is that the Ukraine not become a member of NATO. The idea of Mr. Putin is to not have to put an army on Russia's borders. You know, the Ukraine was part of Russia for hundreds of years. It is a wholly failed experiment, independent. But if the Ukraine moves to NATO and Russia must now build an army and surround the Ukraine to obfuscate the threat of the NATO army in the Ukraine, well, the world's a vastly less safe place. And it's not in anyone's interest to do that. And yet that is what the United States is moving towards. I thought you ought to know that the Libyan Air Force, the very Libyan terrorist regime that America created when the Obaminator, in concert with Senator John McClown, decided to bomb the secular government of Libya and turn the country over to a thong host of of rival Islamic terrorist organizations. Well, now the Libyan Air Force has bombed a Greek-operated oil tanker chartered by Libya's national oil company. Bombed it, killing two crew members. Yeah, bombing an oil tanker. I mean, not only is that a disastrous environmentally, but that's a terrorist attack. The oil tanker doesn't have anti-aircraft guns. It's not a weapon of war. The Libyan military spokesman told the BBC the ship's movements at the port of Derna had aroused suspicion. The oil company rejected this, saying the ship was delivering fuel to an industrial facility there and authorities had been kept informed. Derna has been controlled by Islamist militants for the past 2 years. The Libyan military attacked the port several times last year in an attempt to weaken the Islamic militants there. A military spokesperson said that the tanker had been targeted because it had failed to submit to an inspection before entering the port. Can you imagine that? Okay, this oil tanker doesn't want to be inspected, so we're going to go bomb it. Oh, boy. Think of what we created in Libya. And that mess is wholly America's responsibility. We made it. There is news out of Istanbul that a female suicide bomber blew herself up at a police station, killing one policeman and wounding another. Istanbul's governor said the woman entered the police station and reported a missing wallet before detonating herself as if she were a bomb. You know, it's interesting that a woman would commit the crime of suicide bombing. Now, of course, suicide bombers are exclusive now to Islam as part of the criminal enterprise that is Islam. But Muhammad didn't speak of any reward for a woman in heaven. Muhammad has a reward for men in heaven, and the reward for men who die as terrorists fighting for his cause as jihadists is to have two groups of virgins. The Quran speaks of female virgins who are perpetual virgins that are afforded to the Muslim who dies fighting for Muhammad's cause, which would be stealing, raping, you know, the like, enslaving. And it has a group of men who are perpetual virgins, but the men who are perpetual virgins satiate the carnal desires of either the bisexual or homosexual males who die as a jihadist. There is no mention of any reward in heaven for females. Now, Muhammad also said, and this was as part of Muhammad's imaginary wild ass ride where he flew the winged ass from one night from Mecca to Jerusalem to visit in the non-existent temple. Yeah, as part of that imaginary journey, Muhammad said that as he leapt from the Temple Mount, from the temple, actually, which didn't exist at the time, he traveled through hell on the way to the Islamic heaven to visit Allah. And in hell, he reported that the preponderance of the inhabitants of hell were women. So if you want to know where Islamic women go, they go to hell. Muhammad was asked why hell was predominantly filled with women and why most women go to hell. And he says because they're not grateful to their husbands. In other words, women are owned by their husbands, and they ought to appreciate the fact that they're owned by their husbands. Muhammad also said, in describing the inhabitants of hell, the women that are in hell, he said that he saw that most of the women were hung by meat hooks through their breasts. So this prophet of Islam, Islam's lone spokesperson, the source of the Quran and Hadith, the entire basis of Sharia law, said that he was in that he went to hell, that he saw that the preponderance of the inhabitants were women, and that they were hung by their breasts from meat hooks. And yet a woman is going to be a suicide bomber to kill innocent people on behalf of that despicable religion. How stupid do you have to be? I mean, Islam is nothing other than a criminal enterprise. It's a plague. It has destroyed everything it has ever touched. Open your eyes. Open your mind. The year 2014 was the deadliest year in Syria's four-year conflict, which is a religious civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam. That's all the battle in Syria is. It is a civil war between the two sects of Islam, between Sunni and Shia Islam. Nothing more. 76,000 people were killed. The UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said that 18,000 of the dead were civilians, including 3,500 children. Well, the fact of the matter is, of the dead, they're almost all civilians because the rebels fighting on behalf of the Sunnis against the Shiite government are predominantly, in fact, exclusively civilians. While more than 15,000 died in conflicts in Iraq in 2014, making that country's worst year since 2007. And by the way, there's really no border between Iraq and Syria, so this is really one total. So that would be 91,000 people dead in the religious civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam that America started by invading Iraq. Much of the violence was the result of advances by the Islamic State and other militant groups in the two countries. Yeah, the al-Nusra Front and all of the Islamic terrorist groups there are sponsored by the United States. We are weaponizing that conflict, which is why the death toll is so high. U.S.-led strikes against the Islamic State between government troops and rebels in Syria and sectarian violence in the sectarian religious violence in Iraq has also accounted for large numbers of deaths. So, America, you're right in there. You're up there in the top five causes of death in Syria. You should be so proud.